The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. Have a great show for you. We're going to have Jordan Simone and Justin Spears joining us. Jordan, talking all things ASU. Figured it was a good time. We're about a month removed from ASU's football season. A lot of optimism going on. Just wanted to kind of take a look back, take a look forward, where ASU's program's at and what to expect for the 2021 season, what level of optimism is there. I think there's a lot with all the players coming back, but also what, you know, where are the areas of concern? And I think Jordan does a good job kind of examining both sides of that coin for ASU. And then there's a lot going on in Southern Arizona right now with Justin Spears. We talk about the U of A women's basketball team. It's going to be a top 10 matchup between U of A and Oregon on Thursday. We get kind of a sense of where U of A's football coaching staff is at, the work that Jed Fish has been able to do. And we touched a little bit on that yesterday, but I wanted to get the Justin's perspective because he is embedded in the Southern Arizona scene. He knows all, and he does a great job for multiple sports, multiple levels, at college, preps, everything. He does so much down there, so he gives some good insight. And then also, pretty cool, Lathan Ransom for Ohio State, former South Point Catholic safety, got to play a national championship game. Justin's been able to touch base with him over the years. This past year, also making the transition, I saw that Lathan, right when he got to campus, he came down with COVID. So what that was like, kind of getting into a transition while not being able to be around your teammates, and now his maturation. They have a couple big time players from South Point Catholic that are playing with big time programs, Bijan Robinson and Lathan Ransom. So he gives kind of his perspective on that as well. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. And a lot going on. National championship last night. Alabama just flexing their muscles, showing that they are the top team in the land. And they were wire-to-wire number one. And, you know, in a year where there was so much that was different, in college football, so much remained the same. If I would have told you, you know, pre-pandemic, that it's going to be Alabama, Ohio State in the national championship, Clemson was going to be in there, Notre Dame was going to be in there, you would have gone, yeah, okay, all right. But no fans. Some conferences really couldn't get off the ground. Pac-12 struggled. A lot of big-time programs not able to, you know, the condensed schedule also made it where a loss meant more. For a lot of these programs, the SEC is really the only one that had a, in terms of numbers of games, a normal experience. And you can determine whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. With what happened in college football, you would have expected maybe a Cincinnati sneaks in, another team that is under the radar kind of sneaks in, but no, you know, Coastal Carolina. But no, it was Alabama. It was Ohio State. Mac Jones showed what he can do. Devontae Smith. He's the Heisman Trophy winner for a reason, putting up video game numbers. It was a bummer that he got hurt, not able to play in the second half. But in the first half, set a record for catches, a record for touchdowns in a national championship game. Are you kidding me? Like, those are video, like, my create-a players, my road to the Heisman players from NCAA 2014 weren't that good. And this guy was just doing whatever he wanted against a very good Ohio State defense. So I think college football, it just continues to show. It's the Jimmies and the Joes, as they say. The guys that are on the field, those make the biggest impacts. Yes, the coaching staff is important. Yes, Coach Saban and what he's built, that culture over there, yes, that's important. But it's their ability to go get the Jimmies, go get the Joes every single year, the recruiting rankings, and take those with a grain of salt, a small grain of salt. But Alabama's already always up there. Ohio State's always up there. We're now seeing Oregon get up there. You know, that's something to keep an eye on if you're a Pac-12 football fan. Oregon is getting back to where they were. USC, Michigan can be on the verge of, you know, Jim Harbaugh getting fired, everybody getting blown out because they go a touch above 500, and he signs a 5-year extension. But they still get top 15 recruiting classes every single year. It's just wild. It's wild that is, it's kind of how predictable, like, yes, it's so much easier to have a Cinderella in a college basketball setting more so than a college football. The Boise States, the Mountain West Boise State that won the Fiesta Bowl, there aren't many of those. There really aren't many of those where it's an argument for them to be in the national championship. The TCUs, before they joined the Big 12, when they were in the Mountain West, the Andy Dalton TCUs, that was one where it was, okay, all of a sudden there are these true Cinderellas. Coastal Carolina, yeah. I think if every team plays this year, maybe not. Cincinnati, and that's the other thing with this year. You kind of have to take everything, you know, with a little bit of a grain of salt because there were less programs playing. So hopefully 2021 fall rolls around. Things are a bit more back to normal. And we can look back 30 years from now at that one weird college football season where there was nobody in the stands. And I can tell my grandkids, my grandnephews, whatever, like, yeah, I was one of six cameras in an empty stadium, and it was bizarre as hell. Hopefully that's what it is, and we don't have to take this into the next set of seasons. But here we are. It's also an accomplishment that a national championship actually happened. So Suns lost last night, 128-107. I'm going to wear that one because I said – we're at a point where the Suns, you look at some teams and it's like, yeah, they should win. Lose to a 2-8, now 3-8 DC team. And it sounds like changes in the starting lineup could happen. And this comes with basketball. This comes in a regular basketball season where, you know, guys need to figure it out. You think of those Miami teams where it was the big three. It actually took them a while to kind of put it together. Golden State, it took them a while to put it together. That's just going to happen. And you throw in a pandemic where the limited preparation, the limited camp, frankly, limited interactions within the locker room and trying to still social distance and everything like that, that's going to come. So we'll see how they bounce back. The other news of that. So the Wizards canceled practice today after two positive tests, positive COVID tests. Suns played last night. So, yes, two players entered safety protocols, according to the Wizards, the team announced. So we'll see if there are any repercussions for the Suns, if that was those concerns, the virus, whatever you want to call it, if that's going to affect the Suns. We're seeing games get canceled within the NBA, and I think that was in anticipation. But I also think kind of mentally some people got used to the bubble where it was every single game was going to happen because they were in a bubble. This they're not in a bubble scenario anymore. So that's why you're going to see some of those games get postponed. I'll be honest, it feels like this is happening more and more, and it's getting a little more consistent. There were reports, there were talks that the league may just put a week or two hold just to kind of let's reset, figure out the teams that are, have positive cases on the roster, figure out the ones that don't, and we'll take a bit of a hiatus, a short hiatus there. So that's what's going on with the Phoenix Suns. But we're going to be talking a lot of football here over the course of the next hour. I'm also going to get into a couple of other things going around the Valley. And all that's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I am Jordan Hamm, handling hosting duties. Appreciate Jared Nielsen, all his help making sure we get back on air. So saw a story last night that really jumped out to me with a former Arizona Cardinal, Jared Valdir, still playing offensive lineman. You remember him. He was the left tackle for some of the best Arizona Cardinal offenses with Carson Palmer, and you know, some really successful teams under Bruce Arians. So Veldheer is going to be signing with the Green Bay Packers. Now that may not be all that interesting, but he was playing left tackle on Sunday for the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts got knocked out, and now he's going to be signing with the Packers. He played for them last year, was kind of a safety for them. They had some depth issues, and he was able to kind of just plug and play, and he really helped out the team. Now, the interesting thing about this is he's able to do this because he wasn't technically on the Indianapolis Colts 53-man roster. So he was on the practice squad, elevated only for that Colts playoff game. So now they're knocked out, essentially available to play. And the Colts, the Packers, who recently lost David Bakhtiari, their star left tackle, they can now have him join the team. So this is what is presumed to be a historical move, and just some of the wild things that it truly is a numbers game in the NFL. You watch Hard Knocks, and it's always they're trying to figure out who's going to be players 48 through 53 and the practice squad and all that sort of stuff, and it can kind of seem like, man, like these seem kind of like some lower tier guys, but the way these NFL GMs, these NFL teams able to manipulate the roster obviously makes a huge impact, and that's something that now Jared Veldheer can essentially help out an old team again. When we look at divisional round, we have the Rams and Packers. Baltimore is at Buffalo, Cleveland at Kansas City, and then Tampa at New Orleans. Obviously, some of these games really jump out with Tampa at New Orleans. Anytime it is division foes going head-to-head. Last night, Tom Brady tweeted out a picture of him looking very elderly next to Drew Brees, who was balding. They got some Photoshop going on that one. The two older quarterbacks going head-to-head. And then Cleveland at Kansas City. Can Baker Mayfield kind of keep this thing going? So NFL playoffs continuing to chug along as we get to, again, we just saw the end of a college football season, now the end of an NFL season. Kind of wild how quickly things have turned. And for those that have been knocked out, it's already mock draft season. We've seen so many left and right. Cardinals picking 16 this year, so we'll be interesting to see what's going on with that. Other big news here within the States, minutes from now, the AIA will be meeting, revisiting winter sports on Friday. They voted 5-4 to cancel the winter sports season because of concerns with COVID-19 and the spread within the state and hospital numbers. A lot of backlash, obviously. A lot of upset parents, a lot of upset players, deservedly so. That's certainly a very tough deal, and something that I definitely empathize with those athletes, with those families. But at the same time, it's walking that tightrope of students' mental health, physical health for everyone involved with a pandemic going on. I said this yesterday, that's something I don't envy, this 9-person board making a vote. I would think that there will be tweaks to this at the very least. It could completely flip and say, you know what, we're just going to move forward with it. And kind of see what happens. It could be, they get put into quote unquote off season mode, which is what happened over the summer for fall sports, where essentially they could scrimmage, they could work out together, because as it stands right now, it's kind of everything is cut off right now. So again, we saw this with the spring sports earlier in 2020. Just awful. The fall we saw greatly impacted. Now winter could be potentially impacted as well. With at least two of these sports, with soccer and with basketball, those have very high club scenes. also. So it might just, it could be a matter of, I know a lot of people, when that announcement came out, it was like, all right, well, we're just going to keep rolling with our club teams. You know, the players are going to play, the coaches are going to coach. That's just a reality of where we're at with high school sports right now. It's obviously tougher to have a club football team. But for this particular season, that actually, it works out pretty well, where the clubs will just step in. So what does that do to the AIA? Is that quick reaction, does that impact their decision? So again, a lot of juggling. I don't envy the AIA. I think they're trying to do what is best in their opinion. But it's also, Kent Summers had a really good column out where it was, these five votes didn't take away your season. It's the fact that we can't get the coronavirus under control in this state is why there's not a season currently. And you can go back to, you know, football and the fall sports started and cases exploded. And it's there, I haven't seen if any evidence, much evidence of there being transmission on the field and that sort of thing. But statewide, those metrics were not in a good spot, and the fall sports just continued. You can make a case that that's not, you know, what they should have been doing either way. Again, it's a complex thing. It's a lot. There's a lot that goes into it. Every family, every school, every community is different with how they're approaching it, with what their level of expectation is, what they're prioritizing. So definitely there's going to be news with that. I know that we're going to have quite a few reporters on that, keeping an eye on what's going on with that. So again, a lot going on here within the state. We're going to get caught up here with Justin Spears, Arizona Daily Star, and he, all things Tucson. There's a big women's college basketball game, U of A against Oregon. We're going to talk about what Adia Barnes has been able to accomplish in the past couple of years to build U of A into what was a bottom third team in the Pac-12 to a top 10 contender, and how quickly that's been able to happen. They've had a rough go against some really good teams, and they just lost to a not good Washington State team, but they have a big game against Oregon coming up on Thursday. Also going to talk some Jed Fish and the coaching staff and what he's been able to do in not a lot of time. And then with Jordan Simone, get caught up, get his thoughts on the national championship. Always fun. We call it Jordan to Jordan. Talking some college football, but fun talking to him about the national championship and then where ASU's at. A lot of optimism going on right now. They got some big-time transfers. They have a lot of their guys coming back. They have their entire secondary coming back. That's a rarity in football, and Jordan will kind of get into that. But also, there are going to be some areas of concern, and what are those? What can they address now to make sure they're ready to go for the 2021 season when spring ball gets going in a couple of weeks and that sort of thing. So I've got a lot still to get to here in the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Justin Spears. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and we are joined by Justin Spears of the Arizona Daily Star. Does a lot down in Tucson, whether it's at the preps level, U of a lot going on. So wanted to catch up with him a little bit. A big week, Justin, for U of A women's basketball. They're going head-to-head against Oregon. It's going to be, what I think, a 10-11 matchup. So they're continuing to navigate through a tough Pac-12 schedule. Just what Adia Barnes has been able to build this year, and kind of, you know, the past couple of years, just what has jumped out to you about this program and how they've been able to get to the top of the mountain, you know, presumably so quickly?
It's so impressive what Adia Barnes has been able to do. And it's gotten to a point where Arizona loses, there aren't any more, yeah, we lost, but we played well in this category. Yeah, you know, we lost, but we're, you know, taking steps in this direction. Now, whenever Arizona loses, it's, we lost, we shouldn't have lost, and we're going to learn from it. And I kind of got that sense from when Arizona lost to number one ranked Stanford at home. I mean, Adia Barnes was not happy with the way Arizona played in that game because they know they're a top 10 team. They were the number six team in the country for a reason. They should be competing at the same level as a program like Stanford, but they get smacked by, I think, by 27 points at home by the Cardinal. You know, this team is very loaded, is very talented at all positions. And this is a team that could really make a run in the postseason. And for Arizona to lose this season, it almost comes as a surprise. Losing against number one Stanford didn't really bother me. This past weekend when they lost to Washington State, an unranked opponent on the road, I mean, that was one of the biggest upsets you'll see in the Pac-12 this year. But how can Arizona respond? You know, Oregon has really had their number over the last few years with, you know, obviously Sabrina Ionescu coming through their program. This is now an opportunity for the Wildcats to, you know, show the Pac-12, hey, we're still one of the top teams in the conference, and we're still going to compete for this conference at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. With those, that Stanford loss, with the Wazoo loss, what can they take from that to get ready for Oregon?
Well, you're beatable. I mean, and it's not just the Stanfords of the world that can beat you. Anybody can beat you on any given day, and Washington State showed that. But the thing about this team is they know that they're still trying to find their way in the Pac-12. They're still trying to establish themselves as one of the top programs in the Pac-12. So Aaron McDonald, one of the most fierce competitors I've ever encountered, she's going to take this personally, especially with Oregon coming up, because she's never had a chance to beat the Ducks in her time at Arizona. She was also at Washington, and the Huskies struggled against the Ducks. So this trip is personal for this Arizona women's basketball team, especially a player like Aerie McDonald. And also too, Sam Thomas, you know, the wing defender who's been exceptional for Arizona. She's such an important piece. This week is personal for this team. And I think between the losses against Stanford, where they were completely outplayed and just and dominated by the Ducks, along with that upset loss at Wazoo, this team is a little bit hungry. And also, too, with the men's basketball team not playing for a postseason, mm-hmm. the women's basketball team, they still have a chance at a NCAA tournament run. So, I mean, every game is important because now you're playing for seeding and you're setting yourself up for the postseason. Getting wins like against the Ducks, I mean, that could really boost your resume.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears now to football. There was a pretty loud reaction when Jed Fish got hired at the end of December, and that has seemed to calm down a little bit. And I think a big part is starting to put a staff together. You're starting to see some of the players come in. When you look at the staff that he's been able to put together with his college and his pro connections, what sort of job do you think he's done early on here in his tenure in Tucson?
He has done everything close to a miracle. That seriously, I don't think Scooby Wright is entering the alumni transfer portal. That's what he tweeted as soon as Jed Fish was hired. Like, he wanted to go to the Coastal Carolina alumni group. What Jed Fish has done so far at Arizona is absolutely remarkable. I mean, with the staff that he's been able to put together, getting players out of the transfer portal, people who were supposed to leave the program after Kevin Sumlin was fired. I mean, we're talking Jamari Joyner and Mayjean Wright. We could potentially be looking at Drew Dixon and Stanley Berryhill coming back as well. I mean, for the only players to leave being Grant Gunnell and Robert Conjul, because remember, Boobie Curry also decided to stay too. I mean, that's huge for Jed Fish, and that really goes to show that these players are buying into what he's selling. And to answer your point about the staff, the guys that he's been able to put together, it's a nice blend of NFL coaching experience, Pac-12 coaching experience, because Brendan Carroll, who's the offensive coordinator, offensive line coach, son of Seattle Seahawks coach Pete Carroll, he was his recruiting coordinator and tight ends coach when he was at USC. You also have Jimmy Doherty, who's coached at UCLA. Jordan Pau-Pau, who's the tight ends coach. He's coached a few NFL tight ends at UW, has been with the Huskies for almost a decade. He's been around the Pac-12 for a long time. And then you add in Chuck Cecil, Ricky Hundley, two U of A guys, two defensive players who thrived at Arizona, were all Americans, were all Pac-10 defensive players, Pac-10 defensive player of the year, all American. To have those guys as a part of your staff was a home run for Jed Fisch. So you add in the U of A factor, the NFL coaching experience, along with the West Coast ties. I mean, I don't think Jed Fisch could have asked for a better staff. And then you add in Don Brown, Dr. Blitz, as the defensive coordinator. He's coached some of the top defenses at Michigan and at Boston College. For him to coordinate that defense, that side of the ball that's been missing an identity for a little bit, I think it's going to be great. And now you're going to have these coaches put these guys in the right position to win. I think Paul Rhodes did that a little bit last year as a defensive coordinator, even though he was a little shorthanded. I think now with Don Brown and all the players coming back, whether they were opt-outs or transfers, for them to come back along with the addition of four-star defensive end Jason Harris, the defense is in a lot better shape than I thought it would be. So what Jed Fisch has been able to do between the staff he's assembled and the players that he's added through the transfer portal, like I said, it's pretty much a miracle.
And you think of Don Brown, the press conferences are going to be quite fun as well. You know, he's a guy that is a pretty entertaining soundbite. But you mentioned Jason Harris, Gunnar Maldonado, Drake Anderson. All these are local guys that U of A missed first time around, but able to now get to come back. Jed Fisch said something that's not, you know, too unique to a new head coach, in an introductory press conference, saying we're going to close the borders on recruiting. We're going to make sure that the home state is the top priority. Every head coach that I've sat in on, their introductory press conferences has said that, but you're not really able to jumpstart the tail end of your 2021 class yet, your 2022 class, but you're still building inroads within the community, getting a guy like Jason Harris, getting a couple Chandler Wolves. Chandler is always stacked. You can always go and get their second, third tier guys are Pac-12 guys that they could go get. So how much of an impact do you think that will make on the recruiting, specifically in state, getting a stamp of approval from Jamari Joyner, getting guys that were local studs now getting to come back?
Well, and I don't know if it was just a big coincidence that all these guys are from Arizona, but even if it is, I mean, you're checking off two important boxes on the recruiting trail for Jed Fisch. You're getting transfers who have collegiate experience, check. You're also getting in-state guys who are from Arizona, check. And not only are these transfers with experience, but these are younger guys. These are all players who are going to come in with 2-3 years of eligibility left. And they want to be a part of the new program that's in-state. Drake Anderson, I don't believe he had an offer from Arizona coming out of high school, but a guy like Gunnar Maldonado, for the past coaching regime to lose Gunnar Maldonado to Northwestern, I don't think I've ever seen Arizona lose a recruiting battle to Northwestern. I just really don't. And it's no disrespect to Northwestern, because I know they have a great program and they were in the Big Ten championship this year. You know, they have something going on up there, but it was really a head scratcher. And then for Jason Harris, I mean, there was no reason why he should have left, especially to a program like Colorado. If he was going to A&M, Alabama, you could justify it. But Colorado, it didn't make sense, because here's a kid whose father was an all-Pac-10 linebacker for the Wildcats. His brother currently plays on the team now, and his mom played women's basketball at the U of A. I mean, this kid was destined to be a Wildcat from day one, and the coaching staff whiffed on him big time. And I think it's really telling that the kids that they missed out on are all coming back, and the players who entered the transfer portal or opted out mid-season are all coming back once the new coaching staff was hired. It's obvious that a change had to be made, and I think, you know, Dave Hickey's really counting his blessings right now because Arizona actually has a roster. But recruiting the state of Arizona is so important, whether it's through the transfer portal, whether it's in future classes in 2022 or 23, because there are a number of players that you can get inside the state. As you know, Jordan, the Phoenix area is continuously growing, and the number of players coming out of the city has really made the Valley a hotbed. And not only the Valley, but South Point Catholic down in Tucson as well. There are so many programs that you could just reach out and maybe grab a player here or there. Is Arizona going to dominate the state in recruiting? Absolutely not. There are going to be some players like the Keely Ringos, like the Bijan Robinsons, that are just going to look elsewhere at bigger programs. But they're in your backyard. You can swim in these waters with some of the big schools, and you can take a swing for the fences and be able to attract a player to come to Arizona. Another transfer that we didn't mention was Isaiah Rutherford, a transfer out of Notre Dame. Even though he's not an in-state commit, if you were to tell me a month ago after Arizona lost 70-7 to ASU that they would get a transfer from Notre Dame, I would think you are crazy. So Jed Fish is capable of landing kids who were highly rated recruits coming out of high school. And I think the more you start to see kids buy in, I think the more you're going to start to see in-state kids in Arizona realize, hey, I don't have to go far to have a good college experience. I could just go down to Tucson.
Last night, national championship, Lathan Ransom able to play in that game. Didn't go Ohio State's way, but you were able to catch up with him before the game, or Arizona Daily Star was able to. In terms of, you know, his maturation and what you've seen out of him and Bijan Robinson, you know, early on, Bijan at the Alamo Bowl had a record setting performance. I don't think we're surprised that this happened, you know, so soon for both of them, but you know, just getting to see them play among the best of the best in college football. What's that been like for you as a guy who covered them extensively at the prep level?
It's surreal because I feel like I've watched them mature from, these young freshmen into amazing young men. And not just that, but how they are as people, how they are off the field. It's been such a treat to watch. Bijan is the most humbled star athlete I have ever covered. I mean, I'm not even over exaggerating. That's an understatement, because he can shake hands, talk to whoever after games. I mean, kids are lining up to take photos with him, and he's willing to take every single photo with these kids. And this is at the age of 17 years old. He hasn't even fathomed stardom yet because he's going to Texas, where if you're the star football player, I mean, you are the man.
If you're running back at Texas, you're
you're the man, especially a star running back like Bijan. So he is just an amazing young man. I can't wait to see what he's able to do next year, because I think that Alamo Bowl was just a teaser. And also Lathan too, you know, Lathan was very real in terms of his expectations when he first got to Ohio State. I thought that was really awesome to hear, because he told me all I was expecting to do was play special teams, because freshmen at Ohio State don't play. Right. So if I can just come in, contribute on special teams, maybe show these coaches what I'm capable of for next year, then I'll be able to get on the field. But he got playing time as a freshman against Clemson. He made the game sealing play, if that's what you want to call it, when the Buckeyes were up 49-28 late in the fourth quarter and Clemson was driving. He batted a ball away. That was an interception, which pretty much ended the game. To see Lathan Ransom in a game like that, make a play like that, it was just so great. And these are kids from Tucson who were literally on the fields of Tucson just a year ago, and they're making big time plays as freshmen. It's awesome.
Yeah. Justin, we appreciate the time and the insight. We covered a lot of ground here in 15 minutes, but appreciate it and keep up the hard work. It's always great catching up with you.
Jordan, you're the man. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and it is a couple of Jordans talking college football. Jordan Simone joining us, does a great job on ASU's football broadcast. Former player turned broadcaster, does a great job. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. From Jordan to Jordan, you got to love it.
Exactly. So last night, national championship, Alabama really just flexing their muscles. I honestly thought it was going to be maybe a little bit closer of a game, but, you know, Devontae Smith showing why he's the Heisman Trophy winner. What was your big takeaway from the national championship and kind of the tail end of the national college football scene?
The Heisman voting committee got it right. Slim Reaper is the real freaking deal, man. That dude is a stud. I think you could just see it even, you know, the National Football League Twitter, all of the players that are in that league giving him mad props. And then Mac Jones as well. You know, you got to give him a lot of respect for throwing five touchdowns. But, dude, Slim Reaper is the truth. The Heisman committee got it right. After watching that game, I'm like, yeah, they got it right. That dude is legit. He's going to be in the NFL for a long time if he can stay healthy. But Nick Saban, man, I mean, to do what he's done year in and year out and get his seventh national championship. I mean, the dude's playing NCAA 2014. I mean, and he's just beaten the game so many times. I saw somebody say, like, man, he might as well just go to Wyoming and see if he can start over because it isn't even fun anymore. So much respect for him and what he's been able to do.
You hear inside information from programs. You know, you're in the know. The fact that we were able to have a national champion and a national championship get through a full season.
Yeah.
Is that surprising to you? Was that the season ever in doubt for you?
No. Of course it was in doubt for me. You know, you never knew, especially with the way the Pac-12 was handling it. But I think the SEC showed that, hey man, fear doesn't win. Look at what Alabama was able to do. They were able to play every single game. A couple other, you know, Saban had COVID at one point, some players did, but they managed. They were able to continue to play their whole season and win a national championship in some of the most difficult circumstances we've ever seen. And not to mention their schedule, which was extremely difficult. And so to prosper through all of COVID and their schedule and different circumstances, you have to give them so much respect. I just think the job that Nick Saban's done has been incredible. So I'm really happy with what I was able to see. I mean, at one point I didn't think we'd be able to watch college football, at all. So to get to the national championship game, and then, you know, you got to give props to Ohio State as well. They didn't play in as many games, and some people thought that they shouldn't even be in the college football playoff, but they beat the brakes off Clemson. And then they showed up in that game. I think Alabama was just so deep at every position and so well coached that they got it done.
Let's focus now on ASU. We've had about a month kind of to digest the season, obviously very up and down when you have, you know, two, you know, a tough loss to USC and then about a month off. And then you're just kind of just trying to navigate and get through what you can with the season. But, you know, finishing strong against U of A and Oregon State. Overall, when you think of this 2020 season, what jumps out to you first?
I think they're a college football playoff contender next year, right away. I think that, you know, with the guys that they have coming back, Chase Lucas deciding to come back, Evan Fields, Jack Jones. I mean, you look at the guys that could have had opportunities at the next level saying, I want to come back. We're coming for it all this next time. You know, we want roses. We want to be in that CFP, one of those top four teams. I think they have a legitimate opportunity. They're very well coached. They have the talent. If they can stay healthy, I mean, it's going to be a special season in Tempe. I mean, look at what the running game was able to do. Zach Hill calling plays got comfortable. This is a team that has a lot of unfinished business. And with some normalcy next year, I think the sky's the limit, man. They could be really special.
Limited time getting to see Jaden Daniels and his jump. And then the back half of the season, he frankly didn't have to throw it that much because the run game was going so well. How do you see him progressing, taking those next steps to be that big time Pac-12 and national quarterback?
You know what? I think the best thing for Jaden Daniels was that going into this offseason, nobody's going to be talking about him. I think he's going to get back in the lab, really get to work. Not that he played bad this year. He just didn't have to throw the ball that much. So nobody's talking about him like they were last year. You know, Jaden Daniels, backup freshman of the year. You know, what a great player he was. The ASU's in great hands. You're not hearing so much about him anymore. You're hearing about the defense. You're hearing about the run game. And so I think he's building a small little chip on his shoulder. And so look out, because next year could be scary. I know he's already got Heisman odds out, you know, or whatever they are. But he's a kid that is really special. And with another year under Zach Hill's leadership, he can be great. He can be truly one of the greatest players ever to come out of Arizona State's football, you know, team. And I'm looking forward to watching it. With the defense the way it is and the run game, how can you not be excited?
You've been in your fair share of college and pro secondaries. How rare is it to have everybody coming back?
It's extremely rare. You know, by my junior year, we had three guys coming back, but Demarius Randall left and got drafted in the first round. And so if he was able to come back, I mean, you're talking about a secondary at ASU next year that could be the best that we've ever seen with the combined starts, Evan Fields and his play, how he can tackle. Chase Lucas probably could have gone in the third, fourth round this year, is now like, no, I want first round. I want to win. And look, at the end of the day, how you get drafted, and I know I'm a little off topic, is by winning games. If you win games, you win the Pac-12, you get drafted. Everybody does. Look at Utah a couple years ago when they got to the championship. They had like eight guys on their defense get drafted. So, look, if you want to get drafted, you win games. And I think they all realize that. I think Herm and his staff have kind of have helped, you know, push them that way. Like, look, if we go and we win a Pac-12 championship, get to the college football playoff, guess who's getting drafted? Guess who's getting first team? All of you will get drafted. So Jack Jones, Chase Lucas, Evan Fields. I mean, you go through this team and then Pierce as well in the back end. All of these guys are going to be back playing together another year. And then the linebackers, Merlin, Darian, the Soli brothers. I mean, then the surprise of the year for me was the defensive line. The defensive line was sensational. They got after the passer almost better than anybody in the Pac-12. So if you can do that with an experienced secondary, see you later. Best defense in ASU history. They have an opportunity like that ahead of them. If they can stay humble, stay hungry, if Marvin Lewis and Antonio Pierce can keep them together, hopefully we're going to keep Marvin, then they have a chance to be one of the best that we've ever seen.
Obviously, we've gone through many of the reasons why there's so much optimism, but are there any areas of concern, areas of growth that you're looking at on the roster within the program where it could kind of temper some expectations for the 2021 season?
Yeah, I think receiver. I think receiver is the only position group that you look at right now and go, they need some help. You know, you lose Frank Darby. He didn't do, you know, anything crazy this year, but he has in the past, and he can take the top off of a defense. They need to develop those receivers this offseason, those young receivers, the LV Bunkley Sheltons, the Johnny Wilsons. You know, figure out what you're going to do with Johnny Wilson in the game plan. He's not an outside receiver that you want running speed routes or swings. He's a guy that you want almost as a tight end, in my opinion. You put some weight on him, and you know, if he can be a good blocker, he could be a phenomenal tight end. And you know, kind of like a Travis Kelce, in my opinion. So that's the position group that I really look at and say, that's where they need to develop. They need to get better there. They need to get more depth so that Jaden can have that, you know, that Heisman caliber year. But look, at the end of the day, this is a team that's going to run the football and stop the run. That's what they're built for. And if they can run the football, Jaden's going to be successful, because at the end of the day, if you run the football, you're going to win football games.
Jordan, we appreciate the time and the insight. Always great catching up with you, talking some college football.
I appreciate it. From Jordan to Jordan, you got to love it.
Absolutely. I'm Jordan Hamm. That's Jordan Simone. And this is the Brad Sussmat Show.